Hi, I'm Tony Smith, head coach of the Warrington Wolves. This is the Rugby League World Cup final hooter on loverugbyleague.com and Radio General.
It is indeed. Thank you very much to Tony Smith, the final hooter goes international rugby league subject.
I tell you what, I can't wait. We're all primed, aren't we? We're ready to go. Start of a World Cup campaign. And, you know, I've just dusted myself off, put the boots on. I'm ready to go.
You got your international league tracksuit on then, have you?
Oh, yes, definitely, yeah.
That's all right.
You can tell I've been polishing the badge and everything.
looks impressive, so that's all I've got to say. Welcome to the Rugby League World Cup final, so not just on Radio General, but in conjunction with the loverugbyleague.com website. And we're joined for the very first one of the Rugby League campaign by James Graham.
James Graham?
I'm joking, James Gordon. That's to make it sound like we've got someone of some esteem within the World Rugby League in with us in the studio.
Hang on, you can't go saying this about James. He's forgotten more than we'll ever know.
Exactly. Welcome, James.
No worries, thanks for having me.
So what's coming up in the next hour of Rugby League chat as we talk about the biggest occasion within the World Rugby League for many a year as well, since 2008, isn't it, really?
Certainly.
So what's coming up, we're going to hear from Steve McCormack, Steve McManara and Adrian Lamb. Also as well, we'll hear from Bob Bezig within the Camp of Ireland. And we're going to catch up with Steve McManara and Carlo Napolitano.
See, I knew you'd fail with that one. Carlo Napolitano.
All right then, starter for 10. Who's the winger for England?
Which winger for England?
Left winger.
I don't know. I've not looked at the team sheet.
I thought I'd say an England team player rather than a Tongan player, because everyone could just say Josh Charney dead easy.
You can say Ryan Hawley even easier than Josh Charney, though.
You certainly can, yeah. So that's what's coming up as we look ahead to the build-up of what is going to be a tremendous World Cup in the World of Rugby League. And big question is, David, is the World of Rugby League ready to start for the World Cup?
Well, I think certainly the news is pretty good from all the camps, well, most of them anyway. But regarding ticket sales, we've got a couple of house full signs which are starting to rise now. There's certainly one in France. The Huddersfield International is selling well. In fact, it's sold out, hasn't it? And I believe that it's going pretty well up in Cumbria as well. So they just love the rugby league up there.
Yeah, Steve McCormack in an interview that Steve Mann's done with him. He's made up to be in West Cumbria.
Yeah, well, I suppose he's a bit like being on home turf for him, isn't it, after that stint that he spent as a Whitehaven coach.
He's an adopted Mara, isn't he, as they call him?
Most certainly.
Not going to add on to that?
That's not a lot that you can add, you know. Okay. He spent his time up in... All I will say is that with Steve McCormack, I won't buy a second-hand car off him because it's done plenty of mileage.
One thing we can say for England, they might be ready to start the World Cup in terms of preparation, but they didn't have the best prep ahead of this competition in the fact that they lost out to Italy in the final warm-up game. And then we have the news of Gareth Hawke being told to hock off.
Can we actually say that?
Just said it, hock
off. You've just said it. You've said it twice now. No, not the best preparation. James, you were there at the Salford City Stadium. It wasn't great for England, was it?
No, not well, I think that's an understatement, isn't it? I mean, we all turned up and we were a bit... We were sort of expecting a one-sided game and thinking, well, if anything, it was going to be a bit boring because it was one-sided. Well, it was far from being one-sided, wasn't it? And you know, and no one would have predicted the Italy win, you know, beforehand. And England really did struggle. They just didn't seem to offer much at all. And I know that, you know, in the press conference afterwards, that Steve McNamara hinted at complacency and. Well, if that's the excuse that they're coming up with, but they certainly didn't look like a team that was going to win the World Cup. But you know, if you're putting on your positive glasses or whatever, you might say, well, they've got it out of the system now. It might have been the wake up call that they needed, and you know, I suppose that we're only going to be able to tell whether that's the case come what 3 or 4 o'clock on Saturday.
To be fair, these are like our top professionals, though. So should they actually need a wake up call?
Well, I mean, if you can't get motivated for a World Cup, then, you know, what can you get motivated by? I mean, a lot's been said about it being Italy, and you know, Italy as a rugby league nation hasn't really got much pedigree, but, you know, the players that Italy have got in their lineup aren't, you know, they're no no dummies. You know, there's a few Super League players, a few NRL players in there, and a lot of sort of second grade Aussie players in there. So it's not as bad as it sounds. And the conditions were difficult on Saturday. If anything, you could look at it and think, well, Italy's win is actually a positive for the World Cup. You know, you look at the format of the World Cup that's been convoluted basically to prevent, you know, one-sided games, and there you are looking at what the second worst ranked nation in the competition has actually beaten, you know, one of the big three, which might suggest that, you know, maybe the teams that you'd sort of disregard during the tournament are actually going to, you know, give one or two countries a bit of a surprise.
So in some ways then, we've actually talked down Italy's role, haven't we? Because they were fantastic. I thought that they completed a heck of a lot more sets. They got a really good kicking game going. And in Ray Nasso, I thought they had the best player on the pitch.
Well, we voted him in man of the match, didn't we? And everyone went for Sam Tompkins.
I couldn't believe that. And neither could Sam, to be honest. I think he was embarrassed to pick up the man of the match after being part of a performance like that for England.
I voted for Ray Nasso as well myself. So I don't know who's voting for Tompkins, but... Italy were very good, and that's not to take anything. I think we've got to be careful that you don't take away anything from what Italy did. You know, as much as we say that Italy have got, you know, decent standard players, it's still a massive upset for them to have beaten England, and they really did. You know, they built on the foundation that they'd built in the first half, and you know they really deserved their win. Could you imagine if that game had been at the World Cup? You know, it was a warm up game, and perhaps it would never have happened at the World Cup, but could you just imagine if something like that had happened at a World Cup, how big of a story it possibly could have been? And you know, there's the potential that I mean, obviously the games, like I say, have sort of been organised in a way that you're not going to get a game like that until maybe the quarterfinals anyway. But could you imagine if someone was able to cause a massive upset like that, you know, what it might do?
Not a good day for the England first team, but it was a cracking day for the England Knights on Sunday. Before we talk about those games at Salford on Saturday, I do apologise, let's give you a rundown of all the results from those warm-up games that took place last week.
Well, Scotland lost 20 points to 38 against Papua New Guinea. Wales beat a Welsh select side 62 points to 12. Fiji took on Rochdale and won by 78 points to 0. And there was another couple of upsets as well, to be honest, or certainly the biggest upset for me was that one between France and America. France on home turf playing in Toulouse, losing 22-18 to an unfancied USA side. And then in the other World Cup warm-up, there was New Zealand 50, Cook Islands 0. No upset there as far as the Cooks were concerned.
Not at all. New Zealand showing just in that game alone that they're going to be up there wanting to keep hold of their crown as the world champions.
Yeah, I think it's been a much changed team and a much changed squad, to be honest, as far as New Zealand are concerned this time round. But they still have a lot of really good players. Simon Manrin is a top second row, can also function out in the centres. Jason Nightingale is another one of those decent sort of backs who can score a try out of nothing. Christian Inu has got a great pedigree in the NRL, and you're right, they have got some top class players, but I think even they are talking down the chances at the moment.
Just looking at Samoa against England Knights, one side of the third at the end of it, but Samoa looked impressive in attack, just looked a bit suspect in defence, didn't they?
I'll tell you what, I've got myself a new favourite player ahead of the World Cup, and that's the fullback Anthony Milford. I thought he was absolutely sensational ball in hand. You described him as a bit like Brent Webb with the way that he popped up around the field. I thought he was a bit more Tompkins-esque with the way that he sort of galloped his way around the field and beat men left, right and centre. What says you, James?
I agree, he was the main threat for Samoa, without a doubt. You know, when he got the ball, he looked dangerous, he looked exciting. I was extremely disappointed with Samoa, to be honest, in defence and attack, really. Whether it's a case of it was very much a warm-up game, a bit of bedding in for them, you know, I don't know, but you'd hope that they would be considerably more competitive at the World Cup. Bear in mind that that's basically England's reserve team, and you know, England's reserves wiped the floor of them, really. I mean, in the first half, I mean, I know Samoa scored the first try, but I think Scott Taylor broke through the middle a good three or four times without anyone even getting a fingernail on him, you know, and that's not good at, you know, international level, and whether that's a case of they've not quite got the middle of the park sorted in terms of defence, and whether the coach is still looking at how he's going to organise things. But you know, when you consider the Samoa kick off their World Cup against New Zealand in Warrington on Sunday, you know, New Zealand, they're going to, you know, like you say, they're a very good team, and they could, if Samoa don't get their act together, they could be on the end of a hiding.
Just looking at the England Knights lineup, one or two eyebrows raised with the inclusion of Zach Hardacre, but Zach Hardacre had a cracking game.
Oh, he was sensational, wasn't he? In the first half, he played mainly in the centre. Second half, he was back in his more favoured fullback role that he's been covering over the course of the past season for Leeds. And he was excellent. His goal kicking was brilliant as well, apart from one point where I think I put the mockers on him, didn't I? And I said, oh, he'll kick this, and then he missed it quite spectacularly.
And one of the Burgesses stood out as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting that Hardacre and Burgess stepped down to play for the Knights instead of playing for the full England team. I mean, it's difficult for Hardacre, isn't it? Because Tompkins is going to be first choice fullback no matter what.
Force his way in as a centre.
Well, I mean, that's the question. Do you play Hardacre at centre when he's been playing at fullback all year? I mean, Australia have traditionally done it where they've had. Players like Jared Hayne and Darius Boyd who play fullback sort of for their clubs and they'll play them on the wing because they want to have their best players playing 1-13, you know, they want to have the best players in the team. So is that something, you know, would you rather have Hardacre at centre or would you rather have Carl Ablett? I'd probably rather have Hardacre, but it's obviously something that Steve McNamara has, you know, obviously decided in terms of the Burgess brothers. I can't tell the difference between either one, so it could have been either one for me.
I tell you what, they were all making yardage, weren't they, as well? I mean, in that particular game, the Knights game, it was Tom Burgess who was fantastic, the way that he was knocking players down, and then we saw what his other brother could do in the other game.
Well, I mean, like I say, they've been getting rave reviews all season, and you know, it's great for England that, you know, they can come into the national team and make an impact. I mean, one player I was impressed with, Scott Taylor. I voted for the Wigan prop as my man of the match. I thought he had a very good game. And, you know, if you look at that England Knights team, there are some good players in there. And there's probably a few players that, you know, were unfortunate not to get into that team. I think my main worry is the half, you know, the half-back pair. I mean, you know, as much as Sargentson and Powell are good young players, are they of a sufficient quality long term to be England 6 and 7, you know, in the future, and have the full England squad at the moment got enough quality in the halves to trouble? Is that where we're getting let down at the moment? We've got a decent pack, you know the outside backs, the first choice outside backs are pretty strong for mine. Is it the 6 and 7 position that we've got issues with?
Obviously it is, because I actually felt during that game against Italy the Sinfield Rangi Chase combination just never really worked, did it?
No, it didn't, and they both spent the time really drifting across both ends of the field, didn't they, without really finding too much going forward and really creating very much. And it was really telling for me that England, when they got the points, they were mainly off the kicking game and the back of the kicking game. They didn't actually create much going forward, did they?
Well, that's it. I mean, and I think that's the problem. And I think the problem you need with it, you need a consistent half-back pairing, you know, especially at international level. You look at Australia and you look at them over the years, the 6 and 7 will be the players that, while the props or the centres might change, or, you know, the outside backs and the forwards might change, typically, once they find a 6 and 7, they're locked in for pretty much the length of their careers. You look at, you know, Darren Lockyer and Jonathan Thurston for years and years, and I think that's what England have probably lacked. If you look at how many different halfback combinations England have gone through over the past few years, is that where, you know, maybe it takes a couple of games for them to click, but you know, you only get a couple of games per season at an international level.
Is it a problem in Super League per se, though, that they're not creating those type of players in decent positions, that time after time we've got to go back to the tried and tested people like Rob Burrow to try and pull you out of something, and even, dare I say, Gareth Widdop, who plays, you know, as a third choice halfback really for his club over in Australia?
I think if you look at, I mean ultimately you're right in that there's not enough creative players coming out of Super League at the moment, but I think that sort of tide is, you know, trying to change it. It all depends on the clubs taking a punt on a youngster. I mean, obviously I watch Widnes. And Joe Mellor is an exciting young English halfback, and I know that England Knights were going to call him up into the squad, but he had to have a shoulder operation, and you know, he's been given the number 7 shirt at Widnes alongside another Englishman in Kevin Brown, and it probably needs more teams in Super League to actually have a bit of faith in a young player at 7, you know, rather than give him the elbow out and not play. I like Stephen Ratchford and I like Richie Myler, are both at Warrington, and neither of them are in the squad, and I sort of think, well, are they the sorts of players that, you know, even if they weren't starters at this World Cup, would you have took them to the World Cup with the view of the next World Cup? Because, I mean, that's, I mean, as much as it's about this World Cup, there is another World Cup in 4 years' time, and England can't get a loot. There's 24 men in a squad, and you know, typically, you know, maybe only 20 of them will get used. So, you know, is it worth carrying an extra two players to sort of ingrain them into the camp so that in 4 years they might be the starting halves? You know, I think there's an increasing number of players now that are coming out, and I think that's being reflected in the stats and the percentages of foreigners in Super League. And it's just a case of, you know, getting the successful formula of them together.
This is why I'm quite surprised in some respects that we don't have the, you know, the likes of Powell getting more of a shout, of Matty Smith, who's had a fantastic season for Wigan.
Well, Matty Smith again is a name that, you know, we played for the Super League winners, the Challenge Cup winners, and he's not in the squad. You know, Stephen McNamara's made a big deal about picking a lot of Leeds players, and while 12 months ago that would have been a fantastic idea, you know, that was 12 months ago. You know, things have changed here, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, like I say, I mean, you look at, you know, you go back to the example of Sam Tompkins. If Tim Smith hadn't got injured at Wigan all them years ago, what would have happened with Tompkins? And that's sometimes what it takes. You know, it just needs a bit of faith from, you know, from coaches, and I suppose the licensing system in a way sort of was meant to encourage that, in that you could chuck a young kid in and hope for the best. And you know, to use the Widnes example again, you know, Joe Miller got thrown in at the deep end at Widnes, and he's come out strong, and I'd imagine he'll be one of the first names on the team sheet for them next season.
Unfortunately, it wasn't the day to be for Sinfield and Chase. Hopefully it'll get better for them in the opening game against Australia, which kicks off the 2013 Rugby League World Cup at the Millennium Stadium. But on Saturday it weren't to be, and I just thought during all that heavy rain in Manchester, I just got the impression some of the guys were wishing were back in the sunshine of South Africa.
I think at times we were wishing they were back in South Africa as well with some of the plays that they came up with. But I think it's one of those things. Being a professional rugby league player these days, it's tough. You've got to take the rough with the smooth, though, haven't you, in a couple of weeks in South Africa preparation?
It interests me how a few weeks in South Africa is ideal preparation for a game in Huddersfield, but I suppose that's a question for another day.
Wasn't to be for England. Great day for Italy. Were a famous victory for the Azzurri, as they like to be called these days. And let's get some match reaction from Carlo Napolitano, Anthony Minicello, Steve McNamara and Sam Tompkins.
Obviously, just leading to the World Cup, it's really important to have a solid preparation. You know, we've been quite tight. It's been hard, obviously, with Anthony playing in the Grand Final, and obviously Aidan and Cam Serrano playing in the New South Wales Cup Grand Final, you know, to get all the teams together. We had a few lads in the Super League. So it's just a matter of time, just going through the basics and what we believe and our KPI sets. And it worked quite well. I thought we defended extremely well today, and I think on the back of a good defence, I think any attack could be prosperous. We kind of sat down together with obviously our leadership group and our coaching group, and we try to understand the way that they played, and we tried to work that into our system, and they did play like that. There was a few things that we didn't work on, but we just defended really well. From an England point of view, yeah, they'd be probably a bit disappointed, but you know, we're over the moon. It's up there. Like, I think in 2010 when we beat Wales, and if anyone knows the inner workings of the Italian Rugby League and Furl, we've really put building blocks in where we need to be in it, you know, in like a 7-year program, and you know, being in the World Cup was one of them. But when we beat Wales, that was a bit of a turning point for us, and then we could get players obviously to come back and play for us like Anthony, and you know, we knew that other players would follow, and it's happened that way.
We knew that it was going to be a tough game. You know, they've been away as well, so they've, you know, probably suffered from a bit of jet lag themselves. I'm sure they'll be much better next week for the run as well, as will we. So, it was a good game for us anyway. We got our confidence up a bit. As Carlo mentioned before, we've had limited amount of preparation, so that will bring the team together a bit more, and we can work on some stuff next week leading into our first game against Wales.
Anthony, for Italy to beat England at rugby league, it's a pretty historic day, really.
Yeah,
Italian rugby, does it just feel that way?
Yeah, it's pretty special. Yeah, the boys are pretty excited at the end there, and
we know that the game in, you know, in the big picture doesn't actually mean anything. So, you know, it's not the way we wanted to start our campaign this year. But, you know, we've got a great opportunity to bounce back next week. I don't know what it is. As I said, I'll see the video and we'll look back on it. But we know that we've got a big improvement in us.
What's the mood like in the dressing room a bit somewhere?
What do you think?
Yeah.
We felt like we were ready for the game. You know, we prepared well in South Africa and probably dished up there exactly what we didn't want to. But you know, the preparation in South Africa will go a long way in this tournament. It's, you know, it's not just to get us a quick fix for a warm up game. You know, we'll build into this now. They'll think they've got an easy week next week, won't they? So if that's how they're thinking, then that's fine. You know, they're the best in the world, and we're under no illusions of how tough next week will be. Massive amount needs fixing up. And, you know, we're not daft. There's some smart blokes in there that know that we didn't perform as we planned to. So you know, it's the pressures. We put a little bit more pressure on ourselves, but you know, we'll see how we go next week.
Yeah, you know, really disappointed. We've certainly not played anywhere near what we're capable of, and you know, that's quite clear to see. So disappointed with that. No jet lag or anything like that. Obviously, we gambled on a bit of a long trip there, coming back on Wednesday. But no, they were absolutely fine. They were fresh. They were ready to go. I just think our mentality was really wrong for this game. You know, probably guilty of looking towards next week and took our eye off this game and. Against a team what obviously were good against us, we've come up on the wrong side. I don't think we were fully focused on the game, yeah.
Look, we've had a fair few things to get through, but no, it's you know, there's no reason there, though. I think it was quite clear to see that like I said earlier on, we certainly didn't play the way we'd practiced. I'm glad it's happened this week in a way rather than next week. I'm sure it will be a lot better for it next week. Very confident that we'll get that work done. Very confident that we'll put in a much improved performance next week, and yeah, we'll be ready. It's you know, disappointing for us all round. So I think we've, you know, it tests our resolve. It tests what we're all about. It tests us about everything we've been speaking about over the last however many years. It's for real now.
This is Chris Hill. This is the Rugby League World Cup final. Who's on loverugbyleague.com and Radio General.
Thank you very much to Chris Hill. I'm sure he'll be looking to have a big impact for England like he has for Warrington Wolves over the last 2 years.
Yeah, he's been a great signing for Warrington, and he's certainly come on leaps and bounds, hasn't he, since he was a championship player at Lee.
Now, in our radio show that we do for Radio General, this is the World Cup final hooter, along with Radio General and the loverugbyleague.com website. Get me too far on that one. It's going to be a mouthful over the next 5 weeks, isn't it? But anyway, we played Lionel Richie dancing on the ceiling. And just thinking of dancing, I think, never mind just a Rugby League World Cup tournament, they can actually do a hacker tournament.
They could, yeah. There's quite a few sides, isn't there, that have different types of hackers. I was impressed by the Samoan one. It seemed to go on for quite a while. There was about five or six different steps involved.
Must be a lot of pressure on New Zealand, because they've come up with a new hacker to impress the world starting on Saturday.
Really? Have they revamped it?
On Saturday, Sunday.
I seen it. They did it at Doncaster, didn't they, against Cook Islands? I was a bit underwhelmed, but I'm not going to be telling any of them that. But yeah, the small one involves a lot of screeching, doesn't it? I found
it does. Yeah, they sounded a bit like Adamant doing stand and deliver. You know, sort of getting going at the start, really.
Okay, then the Rugby League World Cup starts this weekend. It is four groups that are going to be taking part. There's 28 matches, 14 nations. Who's going to get the way all the way to Old Trafford at the end of November? Well, we're not too sure yet, but there's still lots of games that's going to keep everybody interested. Starts on October the 26th. It's England versus Australia, and we have Italy versus Wales.
Fascinating start to the tournament, that, me, particularly thinking about the Wales and Italy. I mean, we saw Italy last week be very, very professional in everything that they did, and the whole outlook of that particular game against England. But Wales, they put quite a lot of points on, didn't they, when they played against the Welsh select? So it does suggest that they're going to try and throw the ball about a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting, that one, because, you know, like you say, Italy, you know, beat England on Saturday, and I suppose Wales would be looking at that game thinking, you know, we've got a good chance of winning this. And you know, you sort of now look at it and think, well, it could go either way. And, you know, you look at the group, you know, you play three group games. A tight win here or there might be the difference between you getting a place in the quarterfinals or not. I mean, you've got to remember that in Group C and D, it's just the group winners that go through. So, whereas, you know, because of the way the system is, the top three in A and B go through. So, for Wales and Italy, it's quite a big... Every game is pretty big, because I think, you know, the only way you're going to definitely be through to the next round is if you win three out of three, you know. So, if you go down to a narrow defeat, you might be looking back in a couple of weeks thinking what might have been.
There's quite a lot of Super League experience in the Welsh team as well this time round. I know over the recent past they've picked a lot of part-time players, but there's quite a lot of full-time pros in there this time round, isn't there? I'm thinking you've got recent Ben Evans, Ben Flower has come off the back of a great season, the likes of Craig Kopchak as well over at Huddersfield. You know, great players.
Well, I think they're obviously you're getting a bit of benefit from the Crusader Super League franchise. I mean, you've got the two semi-pro teams who are doing that, but I think the development of the game in Wales is a lot stronger than it has been. You know, 5 years ago, you've also got the benefit that, you know, Yestin Harris is at Wigan, and Wigan have invested a lot of time into the development of the game in Wales, which can only be good, you know, for the game. And I know Wigan are doing a similar thing in Cumbria now, aren't they? So I think it's just a case of there's been a lot of time and effort invested into the pathway in Wales, and they're starting to, you know, you look at the team and these are, you know, most of them are Welsh lads, you know, whereas maybe 5-10 years ago they were sort of roping in, you know, Aussies who could qualify, or, you know, people, you know, Englishmen who qualify via one day round line. But, you know, Wales are one of the teams in the tournament that you can look at the squad and say, you know, this is a true Wales team.
Be interesting to see how the Welsh guys go under the guideship of Yestin Harris. But in Group A, it's England, Australia, Fiji and Ireland. Group B sees Papua New Guinea, France, New Zealand and Samoa going head-to-head for the chance to step forward one step closer to the World Cup final. In Group C, Tonga, Scotland and Italy fight for the right to join the big guns there as well. And in Group D, some interesting teams. It's USA and the Cook Islands.
Some fascinating teams there, really.
Actually, C and D, isn't it?
No, well, I think in Group C and D, you play... There's three teams in each of them groups, so you play each of them teams once, and then because to make up the numbers, you play one of the teams from the other group. So the group, if you're in Group C, you'll play a game against a Group D team and vice versa. And that's just, you know, as we were saying earlier about the convoluted format of it all.
Just looking at Group A, Ireland, they'll be feeling quite aggrieved to be included in the group that involves England and Australia.
It is unfortunate, but I know that the Irish camp are really itching to have a go at the two big boys of World Rugby League.
Well, I mean, it's worth noting as well that in that group, the third place team actually gets through to the quarterfinal. So Ireland, in theory, only need to beat Fiji. And assuming there's no upsets anywhere else, they'll be through to the quarterfinals. I think in a way it's a compliment to Ireland, because it's almost, you know, they did well at the last World Cup, didn't they? You know, they caused a little bit of an upset. And obviously when they did the format, they probably looked at Ireland and thought, this is one of the stronger nations. We fancy Ireland to give England and Australia a bit of a game, as opposed to maybe a Cook Islands.
Dave, before you carry on what you were going to say, let's just get an idea of how the Irish feel when you cross up with Bob Bezic.
First of all, Bob, congratulations on your selection to the Ireland World Cup squad.
Thank you.
It follows a pretty good personal season for yourself. How do you summarise that?
It's been enjoyable. Just enjoyed getting stuck in with the lads. I think we've all had a good right, and we've won the cup, which is brilliant. And that'd be the last one to do it. But it's certainly been a very enjoyable year, and one that I'm satisfied with, but I'm not happy with. I think I'll get a lot better next year, and I'm always looking to get better anyway. So I'm not happy with it, but I'm quite content.
That was going to be my next question, actually. Where do you see yourself improving on that? Because you've got selected to a World Cup squad.
Yeah, everywhere. I just want to continue getting better for the rest of my career. I don't see any reason not to. Keep myself fit, keep training, keep working hard, keep listening to what Paul and Neil are saying, and then I'll get better. And hopefully we'll win some more stuff next year.
I know when I've spoken to you at various points of the season, you've been sort of filling a whole multitude of roles and positions, haven't you?
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, you're hoping to tie down this number 9 slot.
Yeah.
I suppose looking ahead to that, was qualifying for that squad one of your goals at the start of the season?
Absolutely, yeah. First off, as with anything, is to get playing and get consistent with what you're doing. Then when I'm consistent, I can have a look and see where I need to change stuff. I did that during the year, and then, you know, set my sights on the Ireland call up. I'm in the squad now, which is fantastic, but I want to get in that team now. You know, there's no end to it. There's no end to it. It's just continuing. And then when we win one game, we'll win the next, and then we're going to the next. So I don't see it ever ending, you know, trying to get better and stuff.
So how and when did you get informed of your selection for this World Cup squad?
I can't remember. A couple of weeks ago, that captain rang me up and said, you know, you're in. So I was like, over the moon about it, because you hope that you're in, you try your best, and you might think you've got a chance, but then to actually get confirmed off the coach is something pretty special. So I was buzzing all that day, and we trained really well last night, we looked sharp, so I can't wait to get in.
Some of these other teams have spent quite a bit of money in going to different places. England, we're down in South Africa. What's Ireland's preparation like?
It's as good as it's been, I'll be honest, for a few years. I mean, we don't have the luxury of going away and spending X amount of money, but I don't think that's what makes a team, to be honest. It's nice to have, that's all the fancy stuff at the end. As long as you've got hard-working, honest staff, honest players and teammates and everyone around you, then you can achieve something pretty special. I think that's what we've done at Leeds. We didn't have much money this year. We didn't really go anywhere. We didn't do anything special, but we just dug in and got the job done, and that's pretty much what we were up to do at Ireland.
That's what they're going to have to do, aren't they? They're going to have to dig in.
They will have to dig in, yeah. I mean, just on that, I mean, Bob was really looking forward to that Fiji match, you know, and I know that we're running a little bit short of time, so we couldn't bring you all of that interview. So it's a bit of a shame regarding that, because he was going to go on and say that he was really looking forward to the physicality of that and mixing with those, you know, mixing with the big boys of rugby league, like I mentioned before. But, you know, looking at that Irish squad, there's a lot of talent there. But there's also a couple of different unknown aspects, you know, younger players coming in. They've got a player whose name that I know I'm going to struggle with coming in from the NRL, and he's been tipped to be a big star for them.
Well, I mean, it's not just about, you know, it's not just about this tournament, is it? I mean, we mentioned it with England. It's about what happens to Irish rugby league or American rugby league or Italian rugby league next year, the year after, the next World Cup. So as much as I've said before, it's about this World Cup, it's also about who's going to be representing Ireland in the future. You know, how successful can these players be to inspire the next generation of players in Ireland? You know, in the next World Cup, for, you know, we look at what Wales have achieved in getting more Welsh players through. Maybe at the next World Cup we might be sitting here talking about how there's more Irish born players that have come through the system. So I think that's, you know, that's another priority of the, you know, it's the legacy aspect, isn't it?
Well, certainly as well, they've got Matty Haddon in the squad now. He's replaced Griggs, and you know, he was come from nowhere. Basically, he's been picked up by Tony Benson down there at Oxford. He's played a season in the first team at Oxford down there, and suddenly he's thrust into a World Cup. And the world's his oyster.
Well, that's what it takes. I mean, like I say, it's all about clubs taking a chance on these players. You know, you never know, you might unearth a gem, and instead of trying to play it safe and going for the same old all the time, maybe, you know, there is untapped talent in these areas. And I suppose that's one thing that the World Cup's going to be about as well. You know, there's going to be clubs watching these World Cup matches, looking at players and thinking, yeah, we might have a look at, you know, we might have a look at him. I know Hull, for instance, have been very vocal in that they've got space on the salary cap, and they might be looking at players who are playing in the World Cup. But obviously not just full-time Super League teams, but, you know, like you say, the part-time Championship teams, the likes of Oxford, who've picked up players like Matty Haddon. And while it's only one step up the ladder for them, it's a big step.
Ireland opened up their World Cup campaign with a tasty-looking game against Fiji, and it's been played at Rochdale. And there's a large Fijian community in Rochdale, and they'll be hoping that they get behind the Fijian team to get them off to a win.
There's a lot of history as well between the Fijians and Rochdale. Rochdale Hornets actually hosted about half a dozen players during the 1960s, which, you know, were fantastic for the area and were really good ambassadors both for the sport and both for the community as well. And they've stayed and made a community. And it was great to see the Fiji team actually reward Rochdale with a warm-up game.
It's a great story, that the Fiji Rochdale thing is, you know, if we take one thing away from this World Cup, it's that story. Do you know what I mean? And it's a positive for the World Cup as a whole, that they've arranged to have the foresight, etc., to host Fiji and Rochdale and have a game at Rochdale. And, you know, I'm looking forward to that game. You know, it'll be a competitive game, but you can imagine that it'll be a really good atmosphere, you know, at Rochdale with the Fiji relations, and, you know, it should be a cracker.
Now on Tuesday, Scotland open up their campaign in Group C. They get a first test of what the Tongan Hakas are going to look like. And Steve McCormack, says he can't wait, and he's lucky that Scotland are based up in West Cumbria. That's where he told Steve Manning anyway.
We can't wait. I think you look at the media launch today at Old Trafford. It's just exciting. The whole country's getting behind us, and we're lucky to be based in West Cumbria as well. And the excitement in that area, and the excitement within our squad is fantastic. So sooner it starts, the better. And I think it's a sellout crowd in Cumbria now for the Tonga game, which I'm not sure there's many other grounds can brag that, really. So it just shows what rugby league means to West Cumbria. And from a Scotland point of view, we're just delighted that they're getting behind us. And the tournament's a few days away. And, it's probably the same as any other team within the World Cup. We want to get through to that quarter final. Saying that, we're also aware of the challenge what's in front of us. The Tonga team next week, very formidable team, and you look at the results what Italy and the USA have had over the last weekend in their respective games, and it's a tough pool, but we're quietly confident. I think we've got an outstanding team. We showed glimpses against Papua New Guinea in our pre-World Cup game what we can do when we get a bit of a more stabilised team, and we're confident that we'll have a good World Cup from a Scotland point of view. We had players what's not played for 6-7 weeks. We had a few players which were making the debut for Scotland, young Callum Phillips. This time last year he was playing for Seaton, in the local Cumbrian League. So to put him in this environment, along with Danny Addy, who was obviously making his debut as well. Players like Bruffy and Dale Ferguson had 20, 25 minutes, and then we took them off and gave some of our younger fellas a go. So we're good. It was good for us. It was a positive hit out, some positive things to work on, and gives us something to look forward to for the Tonga game next week.
Certainly we'll do as well. Steve McCormack mentioned he feels Scotland are good enough to make it to the quarter final. He also said it's the best Scotland squad that he's had to pick from.
I think he's got a lot of talent in that squad. Obviously Danny Bruff's come off the back of a magnificent season where he's been named Man of Steel even for Huddersfield Giants. The likes of Alex Hurst has a bit of Super League experience behind him. Dale Ferguson as well has come off the back of a really good season, and he'll be hoping to impress ahead of his move to Bradford Bulls next season, won't he?
Well, that's it, and we talk about England's problems in the half-back area. You look at Scotland's two half-backs in Danny Bruff and Peter Wallace, and that's a pretty formidable half-back pairing. So I think Scotland have got the potential, and Steve McCormack's an experienced coach. He knows what he's doing, and I don't think it's beyond the realms that in a couple of weeks' time that Scotland will be lined up in the quarterfinals. And I tell you what, if they do get to the quarterfinals, England or New Zealand or whoever they might play, they won't get an easy game.
In Group D, USA open up against the Cook Islands, and they've got Eddie Pettibone, who's signing for Wigan Warriors next season. That just shows you the quality the USA have got in their squad.
It does. I think he was opening out for a bit of a call-up for the New Zealand squad, actually, up until about 8 or 9 weeks ago, wasn't he? But he'll go really well, and I've seen a little bit of him over the course of the season. He looks a handy signing for Wigan next season, considering that they've lost quite a few members of their pack, or are losing them.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting that the USA's win over France on Friday, they were missing four or five of their, shall we say, better quality players, and Pettibone was one of them. I think it's going to be interesting. The World Cup is going to be an exciting time. There's a lot of players that people over here won't have seen before, as much as there's plenty of players who fans over here will be familiar with, and it'll lend itself to, some good competitive games.
Now in Group B, Papua New Guinea opened up against France, and Adrian Lamb caught up with Steve Manning. He said it's been a long time coming and he's more than happy to be based in beautiful Hull.
It's been a long time coming, it's been a long year, and even a long time since the last one, so time flies when you're having fun, and it's great now that we're all arrived and Papua New Guinea are based in beautiful Hull.
That win at the weekend though, it's just set you right going into your opening game.
Yeah, it was a match that we desperately needed, not only to find some confidence through a win, but also to confirm the 17 in the first game against France. We've had a couple of camps this year in Papua New Guinea, and now that we've got our international contingency of players join us, we've just got to finalise that last 17, and that game was important because we weren't quite sure of the bench at that point.
And the opening game is always going to be a big game. Everybody goes into it with expectations, and Papua New Guinea aren't going to be any different, are they?
No, it's we're the only country in the world where rugby league is national sport at home, and the expectation of the country is bigger than anything else, and we're aware of that. But you know, we're also aware that to keep everyone happy, we've got to perform and please ourselves first and foremost. And you know, we do play France on Sunday. It's traditionally a really tough game. You know, they're coming off a bit of a loss, and we're coming off a good win. So, you know, we're not going to look too much into their game on the weekend. But, you know, their expectations are always there, but none more so this time around than the group itself from within. Well, this week will be all about us, focusing on us and our preparations and trying to leave all those variables that we can't control out of the way and just make sure that we give ourselves the best preparation and opportunity to win on Sunday. Yeah, there's always an expectation from home, but that's what, you know, that's the great thing about having rugby league as your national sport. So, you know, we've got to try and shield that from the players so much that it's, again, it's just about performance this weekend and personal performance and expectations within the group, and make sure that we just achieve all the one percenters that we've been, you know, working on really hard over the last couple of weeks, and not let the outside influences affect the way that we play.
Tell you what, Adrian Lamb talking about expectation on Papua New Guinea. How did England deal with the expectation that's on their shoulders?
Poor, that's the $64,000 question, isn't it? I think they've just got to put last week behind them completely. Just forget it ever happened. Move on from the incident involving a certain Gareth Hock, who's got himself kicked out of the England World Cup squad, and let's hope that they can move forward, because they're going to need all the help they can get against Australia.
Yeah, it's really pivotal, I think, how England doing this tournament. You know, there's a lot of downbeat and there's a lot of negative press at the moment, isn't there, with the whole restructuring debacle and the Super League clubs revolting and stuff, and you can imagine if England have a few weeks, you know, a few poor performances, there's a massive queue of people ready to, you know, chuck a bit of stick at them, you know, and I think it's you can't underestimate how important the games are, and it's just trying to make sure that the players don't feel that pressure and just, you know, portray themselves in the right way on the field.
So it is going to be an interesting World Cup. Big question, is it going to be a success? Because we know what happened in the World Cup in 2000 in this country.
I think it will be. I think that already the signs are good. There's a lot of interesting teams. There's a lot of players who, you know, people over here won't have seen before. And that's fascinating. You know, this is why I'm really looking forward to some of the perhaps lesser nations coming up against each other. That's what's really going to excite me about this World Cup.
Yeah, I think the scheduling is really good. I think I'm looking forward to doing as many games as possible. And I think the main challenge is what happens after the World Cup. You know, how does the sport of rugby league use the World Cup to springboard forward, not just in this country, but in all the developing nations as well?
For New Zealand, I suppose, for them as a team, it's that Sonny Bill Williams feel-good factor about them.
It is, yeah. At the moment, he's placed his future to rugby league, and the New Zealand rugby league is all the better for it, for mine.
It's going to be the Battle of the Hackers on Sunday in Warrington.
Certainly.
Yeah, I mean that's going to be a big game. I think the New Zealand Samoa, as we said before, Samoa struggled last week, and New Zealand have got, you know, like you say, New Zealand are the holders, so is there a lot of pressure on them to repeat what they did in 2008? Can they do what they did in 2008? Is Sonny Bill Williams strong enough to carry them all on his own? I mean, that's, you know, they've got plenty of other good players as well, but he's the player that probably everyone's going to want to see at the big games.
It's going to be a great tournament. We're going to be there all the way from Cardiff down to Old Trafford and all the games in between. If you're going to any of the matches, enjoy your Rugby League. If not, make sure you log on to the loverugbyleague.com website.
The Rugby League World Cup Final Hooter, brought to you by Radio General and loverugbyleague.com.